I'm guessing that includes the Noah and the Ark thing. And then there was a massive redaction during the Babylonian captivity where the Jews said, well, we haven't got a temple, which had previously been the center of worship. So what we're going to do is we're going to make our scriptures the centerpiece of the whole thing. And so it was the redaction that was done by scribes in Babylon during the captivity that gave us the older parts of the Old Testament in the form that we have them now. I'm sure that the composition of the Noah and the Ark story, as we presently have it, the scholars know which of those periods of redaction it was. But I personally don't know. However, that particular legend, the one we find in the Bible, is actually a weaving together of two different versions of the story. And the redaction process was so sloppy that you could actually tell it was from two different versions because the redactor was so interested in making sure that he included as much original material he could to be able to weave it into one story. That he kept the contradictions. Mm-hmm. So right in the Bible, you say, you know, how come it's so many of this here, and then it's a different number here, etc. Most of the redaction that happened in Babylon. It was done pretty well, but that's such a sloppy piece of redaction. I suspect it goes back to the older period. And so anyway, it's kind of funny that the story of Noah in the Bible, Noah and the Ark in the Bible. If it's literally God's word, well, God speaks with fork and tug because there's two different versions right there in one story. In the Bible, the basic storyline is that the world has gotten real wicked, and God's starting to regret that he created human beings because they wound up so evil, and so he says, "Well, I'm just gonna drown them all." But I said, well, before I drown them all, I better kind of see if there's any good ones left. You know, there might be. So, I'm gonna have to do some snooping around and see if there's anybody that I ought to save from this mass drowning. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, he finds Noah, a righteous man. And so he says, "Well, I'm not going to drown Noah and his family." And the animals aren't wicked, so I'm not going to drown those. So he tells Noah, "Look, you're going to have to build this big boat." And here's the specifications for the boat. Mm-hmm. and there's going to be a big flood, and you're going to have to survive in it for a while. Okay, but in addition to that, the reason the boat is so big is because you're going to have to save all the animals on the earth, and of course, not literally every individual, but breeding pair, so that after all this is over, you let the animals loose and they'll do the same thing people do. So they go scout up the animals. In a different version of the story, it's not a breeding pair. It's seven individuals.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so So anyway, the popular version is a breeding pair. That's easier to explain than seven. And so it rains for 40 days and 40 nights, and so the water gets deeper and deeper, and finally the rain stops, and Noah decides, okay, it's time to open up the hatches, and hope that we can find dry land. Of course, there's no means for propulsion on this ark. if you can see the shore a mile away, what's your next step? So anyway, he sends out a bird. Hoping that if the bird finds dry land, that the bird will return with a leaf to indicate that yeah, there's dry land out here someplace. And I've forgotten the details, but I think he sends a bird out once and not comes back, and then another time the bird comes back with a leaf. So they know there's dry land, and anyway they finally hit dry land, and lo and behold, it's the top of Mount Ararat, which is in Turkey, and it's about 18,000 feet high. It's not a hill. and so when I'm, everybody, yeah. you know, everybody bails out, and they set up camp, and then some interesting shenanigans happen that aren't really part of they're not part of the flood story. But of course, you can see some obvious problems with the story, if taken as history. Like if they're on the top of Mount Aurora, that's above the tree line. Okay, so. Kind of inconvenient for just kind of stepping out. And of course, if the bird came back with an olive leaf, the highest elevation you're going to find those in Turkey is probably 2,000 or 3,000 feet. Okay, so, and from a meteorological point of view, the average moisture content of the atmosphere is I think it's about 2 or 3 inches. I mean, if all the moisture in the atmosphere precipitated You get about 3 inches, not 18,000 feet. But you can get rainfalls a lot more than 3 inches, but it's because you're taking an enormous amount of air and funneling it into some place where cotton condensation can take place. And so it's like you run an enormous amount of air into a small space for precipitating the moisture content. The idea that it's historical is very, very easy to expose as ridiculous. And anyway, what the hell is it? It's a morality tale. You know? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you just ask, what kind of a story is this? It's a morality tale. Okay, mythology suits that purpose just as fine as history does. Okay, but then you can go back to the question. Where did all this come from? You know, they don't build big boats in Jerusalem. And then there's that other problem. Why are the two versions of the story? Okay, well, obviously, whatever the origins of the story were, it's from someplace else where big floods, boats, and stuff are just part of life there. Okay, well, big floods, boats, those kind of stories don't originate in the hills of Judea. There's no big floods on the Mediterranean. So, where are the big floods and moats? Mesopotamia. So, what is Mesopotamia in this picture? There's a minimum Babylon. And then if you want to go further back in history, the Sumerian civilization, which I think was about around 5,000, I think about 4,000 BC, it's when they talk about the history of the Western world, they usually begin with Babylon as though that were the oldest, and that's because so much is known about Babylonian Empire, and a lot of the stories that are in the Bible obviously come from there. The Tower of Babel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, called the Tower of Babel because it was this big tower that was built in Babylon, and archaeological excavations have found towers of that type. They're called ziggurats, and so although the story of the Tower of Babel, the story itself is the form that we find it is fiction. It actually has a historical basis. Okay, so in the Bible we have these two different stories.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they can't have originated in Palestine, because the theme is big boats and big floods, and you know, nobody in the hills of Judea or in the mountains of Lebanon tells those kind of stories. So what landed in the Bible were two different versions of a legend that the scribe, when he was compiling the account, decided to use both of them. The idea of if this source material is kind of flimsy and this source material is kind of flimsy, you put them together to make the story a little bit more solid. And of course, that's a very common technique in redaction. Y'all may not be familiar with the term redaction. A more familiar word is editing. Okay, but in editing, you're basically taking a single document and cleaning it up. In redaction, you're doing something a lot bigger than that. You're frequently taking different stories and putting them together, or taking a story and doing a lot of massive rearrangement in it. When you hear me say the word redaction, if you translate that to editing, it ain't the same thing, but it's kind of the right idea.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so. Okay, so just based on what we see in the Bible, we know it was a legend that existed in various forms, and that it didn't originate in the countries bordering the Mediterranean. Because nothing in the story is of that character. What's in the story is obviously straight out of Mesopotamia, where there are these vast swamps. And there's an annual flood. And of course, any place you got an annual flood, that's in a mostly semi-arid area. The magnitude of the flood from one year to the next, big differences. So your civil infrastructure that's meant to deal with water is based on what you think is probably the most you're going to see in your lifetime, but it's all guesswork, and sometimes there's a flood that's a hell of a lot bigger than that. So we can actually pinpoint things a little bit more. And furthermore, we can say, well, if this was really a story about floods in Mesopotamia, they weren't trying to save all the wild animals. They were trying to save their livestock. Okay, so just by looking at the Bible, the story in the Bible, and just thinking about what's there and reasoning about it, here's what you can say that it's actually legendary. It's a legend that exists in various versions, which means you have to go farther back. If there was an original version, that you can say it didn't come from the Eastern Mediterranean, and that it did come from Mesopotamia, and that the animals were not wild animals, but that they were saving their livestock from a flood, and of course, this business about Mount Ararat, they were not hoping to land on the top of Mount Ararat, where the source waters of, I've forgotten, it's either the Tigris or the Euphrates, I've forgotten which, I think begin on Mount Ararat. They were just hoping for a safe landing spot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, just reasoning through it, you can figure that out. And of course, when you come up with that whole thing, it is based on intelligent guesswork, so you can't say definitively this is what it was. But if you can say common sense tells us that this is a most probable origin, well then, yeah. As it turns out, we actually have that legend.
It is.
Yeah, it is. It is called the Epic of Gilgamesh, and y'all may have heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
The Epic of Gilgamesh is. Is this huge epic story that came down to us in cuneiform tablets from ancient Sumer. I haven't studied the whole epic. So I can't say an awful lot about it, but I have read the flood story. The epic itself has to do with the origins of people in Mesopotamia, and this hero whose name is Gilgamesh, and he's kind of part god, part man, part Superman, but fallible. And then there's various other characters in the story as it unfolds. So as an epic legend of origins, there are other cultures who have their own epics that are of the same character. For example, in India, you have the the Mahabharata, I think.
Mahabharata.
And in which there is one story that's in that. That's very well known, which is called the Bhagavad Gita, which is if you had to pick the greatest story ever written. That's written in a form where you can read it and understand it, unlike, for example, the Gospel of Mark, where without a bunch of background to understand what it's about, you can read the Gospel of Mark and have no idea what you just read. Mm-hmm. Okay, but the Gita is written in such a way that without any background, you can read it. And and get the gist of it. Because that's another example of that kind of epic, but of course the content is completely different. Okay, so you have the epic of Gilgamesh, which is this enormous epic, and in it there's the story of the flood. And various gods and goddesses, because you know in ancient times, you know there were gods and goddesses, and they were all part of it wasn't patriarchal like later paganisms were, and so the gods and goddesses are kind of unhappy with the way people are doing things in this particular area of the Tigris-Euphrates Delta, and they know that there's. And they know that there's about to be this big flood, and so anyway, they're thinking, well, should we warn anybody? And anyway, they find this good guy by the name of Enkedi, and they clue him in, and they tell him, you know, you're gonna. There's this flood coming, so all this stuff you think is dry land, where you pass your livestock, it's about to be more than ankle deep. So you need to build some boats and get your livestock on them and get your family on them. Avoid the big drowning. And so Enkedi does this, and then comes the big flood. And of course, everybody goes, we're talking. I'll call them rafts, okay? But we think of rafts as these things built out of wood and they're rectangular, okay? But these were big boats woven from reeds, and possibly with a little bit of structure from local trees. And trees that grow in swampy areas. We're not talking timber.
Mm-hmm.
They're usually round. They're shaped like that. They're like tubs.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know they're kind of flexible, and so they have to be round in order to hang together when. You put them in the water, put weight in there. If it was rectangular, the sides would collapse. So they have to be round. There's usually a structure of ribs, and just like making a basket.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got the structure of ribs, the radial ribs. And the circumferential weaving of the reeds, okay. But then, well, how do you keep the thing from leaking? As it says in the Noah story, you pitch it from within and from out. Pitch meaning bitumen. There's no bitumen anywhere in the Eastern Mediterranean. Where's the oil? Saudi Arabia. and other there's oil all over the place in Mesopotamia, and so they use bitumen. For sailing because it was available.
Mm-hmm.
And when you live in an area that's either literally in the swamps or in areas that are frequently flooded and where you have irrigation structures and you have big wide flood canals and stuff. You got so that you use those as transportation highways.
Mm-hmm.
Just like the Erie Canal in the Northeast, where you have boats and these wide canals and no propulsion. You tie ropes to them, but pull them along with horses or oxen or even peoples. Or you use a pole and you push them along with the pole. In the Bible you see, you pitched it within and without. Well, what is pitched by human? Okay, well, where's the oil? Mesopotamia.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when it comes to the question, where did the story come from? You can positively nail it to a region. And that's the mid to lower parts of Mesopotamia. Okay, and I should say the mid parts, although the Bible doesn't quite specify that, but in the story of in Kedi, Good. they're just these tubs, and they just float down with the flood, and eventually, of course, as the flood spreads out, the waters get shallower, and eventually they hit land. I won't call it dry land because now we're talking swamps. It doesn't originate in a swamp. It originates in an area where they can pasture livestock, and expect occasional big floods, but rather rare. So anyway, the story pretty much ends with them floating downstream. Okay, but then you ask, what was that legend about? It's the story of how the southern swamps of the Tigris-Euphrates Delta were populated.
Oh.
When you look at ancient legends, mm-hmm. there's almost always a historical basis for them. They're telling a story about something. They're usually explaining origins. But they put the whole thing in the form of a story that's easily memorized, and so what comes down to us is the story, and not a scientific explanation of anything. Okay, so that's the story of Noah and the flood. Any questions, class?
Nope.